Speaking of Carolina, they stink.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. He's firing away here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. And as Ira would say, we are going to chop it up here nice and clean. If you haven't listened to our last podcast yet, you can find it at JoeBucksFan.com, Podbean.com, Apple Podcasts, all kinds of places. Ira gets into some scenarios for Todd Bowles. You know, what might happen if the Bucks win on Sunday and then they stink it up in the playoffs. Ira gets into what might happen if they lose and all kinds of things in between. Lots in there to chew on. We're going to focus a lot on today's game. And, of course, we always tell everybody, Sage, that the Giant is almost ready. 15 acres, incredible dealership right there on Dale Mabry Highway, a mile north of the stadium. Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to help all of our Bucks fans. They've got that nationwide lifetime warranty on new vehicles, all new vehicles. He'll give you a $500 gift card. If you custom order a vehicle, go online, use their concierge service. It's so easy. And there's no deposit. If you got bad credit, they have options for you there. Great pre-owned selection. All kinds of things there, Sage. Bill Curry Ford. We can't wait to see by the end of the month the unveiling of the massive renovation there. But they're open, and it looks really good. They're just putting the finishing touches on it. BillCurryFord.com. Get shopping today. And Big Storm Brewery, Big Storm Distillery. Big Storm is Florida's best craft beer. It's the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Ira, you know, they're redesigning a bunch of cans at Big Storm. That's exciting.
I wonder if they're going to name a beer after me, Steve. What do you think?
What would you call it?
Sage Beer. No question.
Sage Light or a Sage Lager? What are we talking about?
Do I look like somebody that should be called Light Sage Beer? Period. You want to throw a locker on there? I got no problem with that.
I can't get a visual of Lee buying a 4-pack of Sage and bringing it home. I don't know.
And then right on the front, you put, you know, you got a picture of me talking to Joel Glazer. I mean, it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Hey, I have the artwork for that for sure. BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com is where you can see the tap rooms, the menus. You can see all the beers. They are in Odessa, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road in Clearwater. Ybor City upstairs in Central Ybor, great place to pre-party, great place to watch this Sunday's game, all kinds of specials going on there. You'll see those at JoeBucksFan.com, $3 Bay Beers, which is Ira's probably second favorite of all the beers there at Big Storm, and they're also all kinds of great food at all the locations. So BigStormBrewery.com, Florida's Elite Restoration, Sage, we'll talk about them later. And we appreciate their support, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. For any in-home disaster, business property, 24/7, you call them. Do not hesitate. Don't get ripped off. Check them out first, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Be prepared. All right, Sage, you're prepared for this podcast. I know you've been working all day on your All-Pro team now. Just so fans understand, you are one of the people who chooses the All-Pro. I believe it's a 50-person panel. Is that correct?
That sounds about right, Steve.
Do you hold that until you pass away? How does this work?
Well, it didn't come with my birth certificate, Stephen. It's something that I'm proud of, along with the being a Hall of Fame representative for Tampa Bay. I've been voting, for the past 30, 40 years for the All-Pro team. It's a lot more prestigious than the Pro Bowl. By the way, I want to clarify maybe a little misconception out there. People were talking about Pro Bowls and what a joke it is. And at times, it can certainly look like a joke. And somebody said, well, Ira keeps talking about how Pro Bowls keeps, it's prominently mentioned in the Hall of Fame discussion room when they're weighing one candidate against another. It does come up, guys. I'm not going to say it doesn't. You know, John Lynch went to 9 Pro Bowls. I would be a fool not to mention that. And also, I would suggest, and I think Lee would agree, that the Pro Bowls in the past have been more significant than the Pro Bowls now with the format. They didn't have fans voting way back when, and so it held more stature. But I do want to add that in the room, without giving away any secrets, and by the way, we're meeting in a couple of weeks in Atlanta to select the class of 2024. While Pro Bowls do come up, what comes up a lot more are All-Pros, And then the one category above that is all decade. You can't mess around with all decade. Warren Sapp, for example. All decade 90s, all decade of the 2000s. Of course, I went strong with that. It's very rare. So that's the pecking order. All decade, which John Lynch didn't have, but Rondé did, and Brooks, of course, and Leroy Selman. And then all pros, especially first team all pros. Very important. And then you get around to Pro Bowls and the guy's personal statistics. So that's the way it goes. So Pro Bowls do count, but there's all pro team, which they want the voters' ballots in by Monday afternoon, and then we're voting by Wednesday on the postseason awards, MVP, Coach of the Year, Offensive Rookie, you know, Defensive Player of the Year, that kind of stuff. And that's not going to be announced until the NFL honors, but you'll have the all-pro announced by the end of next week. It will be announced.
All right, Sage. Well, we're proud you have your vote. I guess it's not for life. There's some sort of, I don't know what the rules are, but we're proud of you, and we know that you'll hand it over when the time is right to Jenna Lane, and she will carry on your Sage tradition for sure.
I do take it seriously because they want to vote by Monday, and I started today to scrutinize the candidates, and I'm going to take 3 days to do it. I won't finalize until the games are finished by Sunday, and then I'll send it in Monday afternoon. But, you know, we're very serious about this thing because it matters. And I'm looking at my all-pro ballot right now, Steve, and I will rectify this Antoine Winfield situation myself by naming him a first-team all-pro safety. There's only two spots for first-team, and Antoine Winfield is the first name that I wrote in under the safety category. This is an absolute joke. This is Buddha Baker. I mean, that's a disaster, Lee. That's a guy making it totally on reputation. He hasn't even had a particularly good season. And once you make the all-pro team, you know, you're in the voters' minds. That's just the way it is. I'm also looking at Mike Evans hard. There's three spots for wide receivers. Three. And then they want you to pick a second team. Well, I'll tell you right now, the first two names I wrote down were Tyreek Hill, and I know he got hurt. But Tyreek Hill's Tyreek Hill. I think he stands alone. And I think he did more than enough before he got hurt. The guy's a monster. He is the most dynamic offensive player in this league, has been for some time. C.D. Lamb, I think, has been fantastic for the Cowboys without a lot of help around him. You know, Mike Evans is right there. He's right there with A.J. Brown, Amon St. Brown, Puka Nakia. I hope I got that right, Steve. The rookie from the Rams, who's been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
You didn't get it right. You didn't get it right, but it couldn't be funnier that way, so we'll leave it.
Leave that in. And then you got Mike Evans, you know, who's been great, who very well could lead the league in touchdowns. And he might get one or two on Sunday, Steve. You never know. So he's certainly in the mix, but there's only one spot for me on the first team that's left because I got Hill and C.D. Lamb a little bit ahead of Mike Evans at this point.
All right, Ira, I'm going to step away and ask Lee a question to give you some time to prepare your answer, Ira. And Lee, what do you make of all this chatter coming from Josina Anderson from CBS, very well respected, very well plugged in, and she reported yesterday, I know you wrote it up, that Bill Belichick is talking to multiple NFC South teams. What do you make of that? Do you think one of them is the Bucs? Do you think Belichick is a good candidate for the Bucs if they were looking to move on from a coach? Or do you think Belichick has washed up? What's your thought on Belichick?
It would not surprise me at all if the Glazer family has been doing their homework. And, you know, we like to think in chronological order. Like, okay, the Bucs fired a coach. Whomever fired a coach, now the coaching search begins. No. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes that's not in the public eye. And I'll say this again, and I know I've said it many times on this podcast. I had heard when in Shiano's last year, Greg Shiano's last year, that the Bucks reached out to Lovie Smith in October of that year. That's when the ball began rolling, in October. Let's say that's the standard. I don't know if it is, but let's say that's the standard. If October is a standard, I wouldn't be surprised if the Glazers reached out to Bob Kraft in November and said, Bob, you plan on keeping Belichick? It would not surprise me. I'm not saying they did, but it wouldn't surprise me. Nor would it surprise me if meddling David Tepper did, or the Saints, the slimy Saints, or if Artie Blank has any common sense, he would have done that. I just think that, you know, we like to think that ownership and management does nothing about a coach until they make the decision to pull the trigger, and then a coaching search begins. I think that's a fallacy. And like most businesses, if you wait till the last moment, you're going to screw yourself. So the preparation is made. If they pull the trigger, they're set to go. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucks reached out. You know, let's think about this. Before the Bucks started their four-game winning streak, everybody and their brother were talking about Bowles getting fired. So why wouldn't the owners think the same thing? I will say this, however. I will say this, and I brought this up, I think, last week on Ivor's podcast. The video that Jenna Lane had of the Glazers receiving line at the entrance to the Bucks locker room after the Packers game in Lambeau, the way they greeted Bowles, just visually, just the eyeball test, it sure didn't look like a guy on the hot seat. Now, saying and doing is two different things, but it sure looked like the way they embraced, the way they greeted, you know, Brian Glazer, hey, right when he sees Bowles, he lit up like a Christmas tree, and they bro hugged and everything. That sure didn't look like a coach on the hot seat, but, you know, images can be deceiving.
Steve, couple of things. Lee, I wouldn't read too much into the Glazer hug with Bowles because that changes week to week. And I suggest that the hug was not nearly as energetic, you know, after the New Orleans game. So things do change. Steve, Lee had a good analysis. You know, most of the time, at least from a Buck perspective, when the season's going off the rails, they don't wait and they're proactive and they start looking around. I think, Steve, I don't know this for a fact, but I would think that the exception to the rule was in 08, Steve, when the Bucks were 9-3. I don't think there was any thought of dumping Gruden at that point. None. Zero. They made the playoffs the year before. They lost to the Giants, who were the eventual Super Bowl champions. No shame there. Then he's 9-3, and then the bottom fell out. So I don't think they were starting to look around December 4th to look to get rid of Gruden. But Lee's points are right for the most part. Now, Steve, I'll say this. You guys might disagree. Bolt has it. He has it well within his power to end all the speculation. All he's got to do, Steve, is beat a team that's the worst team in the league. And then, you know, maybe, spring an upset against the fading Eagles or Dallas in the first round at home. Steve, I am suggesting that should Bowles, you know, end up with 10 wins, including a playoff win, and Belichick's available, I don't see how you can fire Bowles at that point, Steve. I just don't. And I don't care if Belichick's out there or not. Can you fire Bowles after winning the division and a playoff game? I don't think so.
No, of course not. However, everybody so far, you guys have dodged the question of, do you think Belichick is a viable coach at his age and what they may want to accomplish? Do you think he's lost any of his fastball, or has he just had a great run that his time is up, kind of like Andy Reid moved on and from Philadelphia? What do you think on that front, Ira?
I don't think he's a great fit in Tampa at this point. Steve, I don't. First, he'd ask who's the quarterback. I'm not sure they have an answer, you know, in January 15th, who the quarterback of this team's going to be this fall. I'm not sure that they can answer that. To me, he's got to go to a team that's close. Put them over the edge. Put the Chargers over the edge. Go do it. I don't think the Bucs are close as presently constituted. I don't. Their 8-8 record suggests they're not. 8-9 last year suggests they're not. Lee, that's a big reach to think that they're a Belichick away from contending. And how many years does he have left to coach? I mean, you know, seriously. So I don't think the Bucks are a great fit, but I'll say it before Lee does. There are other factors, Lee. There are other factors. There are economic factors.
Yeah.
Now you can say, well, wait a minute. He's going to ask a lot more money than, you know, Ben Johnson is or somebody else, you know, coordinator, if you want to move on from Bowles. That's true. But the economic fallout from getting Belichick, they're trying to sell tickets, Lee, and trying desperately to sell tickets right now for the future next 2 years. National attention comes your way. The Glazers like that. So there's some extraneous factors, Lee, but from a football perspective, I don't think this is a great fit for Belichick.
Yeah, to answer, I don't disagree with Ira. Steve, to answer your question, are we talking Belichick the coach or Belichick the football czar? I think we're talking Belichick the football czar. I think the proof's in the pudding. He or whoever he's chosen to do the personnel up in New England dropping the ball. Belichick's defense is not bad, you know, but the offense is terrible.
Terrible.
And who's picking the groceries there? So I think as a football overlord, yeah, his time may be gone. As far as an X's and O's guy, I'm not so sure.
Sage, you know, I don't know. I can't say I know enough about the intricacies of his coaching. Obviously, he's had issues with his staff, but, you know, he worked with Jason Light before, and we talked about this in the past, that connection there, and he has a past connection with the Glazers. I think the Bucks are kind of attractive for him in the sense of the division. Like, I think Belichick knows I can go and we can redo it my way here, and I can still win 7 or 8, and I need those wins to get closer to Don Shula. He may even look at the Chargers and say, hey, look, but, you know, we have Justin Herbert, but this is a total overhaul job, and I don't like the way this team is constructed, and the division is tougher. It's really hard to say, Sage, really. I mean, of course, you don't know what the guy wants to do personally.
The interesting subtext to this whole thing is, can Jason Light do it again? Lee, can he do it again? Now, the difference is, you know, Jason Light's not in any danger. I thought he was in danger after the 2018 season. I thought he definitely was. They had made a coaching change. He still had his job, but he didn't have any security, Lee, at that point. He didn't. No security. And then, Lee, lo and behold, door number two, there comes Bruce Arians, who he had worked with, who they each respected each other. And, you know, a year later comes Brady. Lee, could the Glazers kind of turn this over to Light and say, you know Belichick better than anybody, bring him on in? I mean, Light's right in the middle of this whole thing.
He's a key element. I don't know if he's the one luring Belichick or if that's a carrot. Whereas previously with Arians, there's no doubt Light was the guy who pulled Arians in. Now, you know, I don't know. I think it's the other way around. It's more like, hey, Bill, you've already worked with Light. You obviously have a relationship with him. It'll be a smooth transition for you. Steve talked about he didn't know what he thought about personally. Now, this is a huge reach. This is a Hail Mary if there ever was one. But Belichick's a big boating and golf guy. He can't do a lot of that in New England. During the summers, he does. But other than that, he obviously can't do a lot of boating in the wintertime. But when the football season's over with, he hightails it to the Keys to go boating.
He does.
Here, he on a little bit of a drive to Clearwater. Boom. Not even Clearwater. South Tampa. So, yeah. That's a big Hail Mary. That's a big reach. It's not like he couldn't go boating if he took the Chargers job, for example.
And Ira, you know, I have to, since it's our fans, your fans, love this so much, I'm just going to ask you to confirm or deny. Sage, can we tell the fans that the Sage has had some direct communication one-on-one with Bill Belichick in the last year or so, man-to-man?
Yeah, you just leave it like that, unspecified. But that is true. And, of course, I sat next to him for 9 hours in that room about 3 years ago when we were picking the centennial class. Had a conversation with him then. Had a conversation with him years back about Warren Sapp. And he was, I think, instrumental in getting Sapp in as a first ballot. Now, Sapp was going to get in no matter what, maybe eventually. But to get him in as a first ballot over Strahan, that wasn't easy because Strahan's, you know, Mr. Personality, and Sapp is anything but. And Belichick helped me. He went out of his way to help me. From that kind of crazy personal standpoint, Steve, I think I'd be in good stead if Belichick came here and went to the podium. Now, look, he's no day at the beach, Lee. We all know that.
Wait a minute. You realize the way he is in these interviews with Ira Kaufman saying, Billy, come on, let's go. Let's open up here, Bill.
I'll say this, guys. I eventually won over Ray Perkins. And, you know, Perkins is a guy who hasn't done anything compared to Bill Belichick. I won him over with the Giants in the early 80s, and I won him over in Tampa in the late 80s. I feel confident, you know, after working on a guy like that, I can worm my way. Steve, you've seen me right into Belichick's heart. If it happens, guys, it's going to start at the owners meetings in Orlando. You'll see me work my magic, Steve. You can't wait for that. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, because that would mean, it could mean that the Bucks finish strongly and Bowles comes back because the team finishes strongly. Now, I was saying Bowles has to go 9-8, which I think he will. Now, with this Belichick angle, it does change something, possibly, Steve, where he has to be maybe at least competitive in the playoff game, if not win it. I'm not sure 9-8 and getting blown out, that may not be good enough anymore if a Belichick's standing there.
Ira, how much does it hurt Bowles? He's a defensive guy. He's a defensive backs coach. Was with Parcells. He was a safety. And his pass defense is it's the worst. That's beyond atrocious. It's the worst. How much does that hurt him?
I think it bothers the heck out of him, because there's nobody else to pin it on. Absolutely not. Even if he's not that involved in the offense, which we don't know, Lee, if that's true. But we know he calls all the shots on the other side of the ball. And as Steve's mentioned for the last month, Steve, I don't know if it still holds, giving up the most passing yards in football, Steve. I don't know if that's still
there.
Yeah,
that's correct.
That's really got to bother Bowles. Especially considering, you know, the pass rush has been decent. Not great, but decent. They're going to have a healthy sack number, no question about it, playing a lot of young guys. The secondary's falling apart without the great number 31 trying to hold up his end back there.
It feels like we're digging a grave for Todd Bowles here, talking about Bill Belichick, but that report came out. We can't ignore it. And as Lee mentioned, these things start growing in advance. You know, the seeds are planted and they look into it. And once you start investigating somebody and looking into a situation, you never know what decisions were made a month ago. You know, scenarios that were crafted. I think just on the secondary that you mentioned, the defensive backfield and the struggles there. Look, Bill Belichick was a defensive backs coach and has had extraordinary defensive backfields. It may be attractive to Light to be like, hey, you know, look at all this money and talent we've got back here. We want to re-sign Winfield. I think Bill could take this group to a new level in a different defense. I think that could be part of this thing. But, Sage, Sunday, big game. What do you expect from the Buccaneers on Sunday? And was there anything that stood out to you and Lee from Dave Canales this week when he addressed the media for like 16 minutes?
Well, one thing that Lee was sitting right there, probably in the third row, his usual spot. Lee, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you ever ask Canales a question where he doesn't have a five-minute answer, Lee? It's amazing.
I know, it's great. It's great.
It is great. It is great. Contrast that with, you know, I watch a lot of Belichick press conferences. It's kind of painful. I watch a lot of John Tortorella ones because I covered them with the Lightning way back when. Those are painful. A lot of one-word answers. You know, he doesn't like hypotheticals, Tortorella. Belichick won't go near hypotheticals. Canales doesn't mind anything you ask, Lee. He doesn't. So, you know, the one thing that emerged, Lee, is this thing like, were they flat? And this guy says they were flat, and the player says they're flat, and the other coach says they're not flat. They got to get their story straight over there, Lee. We all saw the game Sunday. If they weren't flat, then they got no talent. I tend to believe the former. They just weren't ready to play, and that's on the coaches, too. I'm not letting the players off, Lee, but it's on the coaches, too, to get these guys ready. It's part of their job. Speaking of Carolina, they stink. We don't have to, you know, talk esoterically here. They're better on the defensive side of the ball. They are.
When's the last time you heard that word on any sports podcast? Esoterically.
And so, Lee, to say that they're better on defense than offense, I mean, that doesn't mean anything, because they're terrible on offense. They're just terrible. Shut out last week. Now, look, I think the Buck defense played okay last week. Okay. Not terrible, considering four giveaways. 0 for 4 in the turnover margin. If Carolina scores more than 14 points, there ought to be an investigation, unless they get a pick six. Word on Mayfield today, Lee, is encouraging. Very, very encouraging. Full practice. Now, the writers aren't allowed to watch the full practice. We got to take their word for it. It sounds like they're going to do everything to get him ready. He wants to play. Sounds like he's going to play. You know, if I'm Carolina, and I don't want to be Carolina because I can't stand their owner, I'm giving Chuba Hubbard the ball, Lee, 24 times. And I don't care if he gets 49 yards. I'm still giving it to him 24 times because I'm afraid what happens when you throw the ball. Bryce Young might be good in about 2 or 3 years if you get him some talent around him. Lee, this is a game made for Todd Bowles' defense. Step up, do your job. I can't even imagine losing this game. All hell's going to break loose, and I don't think it's going to be taking very long for people to lose their jobs on Monday morning. And I'm sorry to say it. You cannot lose this game.
Florida's Elite Restoration, family-owned, good-sized company covering the entire Bay Area and beyond. When you have a disaster at your property, fire, flood, mold, storm damage, wind damage, whatever it might be, you call Florida's Elite Restoration 24/7. Before you call your insurance company, they'll come out, give your property a free evaluation. If you mention Ira Kaufman or Joe Bucks Fan when you call, you'll get $500 back if you need their services after their free evaluation and you agree to let them move forward and work with your insurance company to get the money that is coming to you to repair your property. It's critical because the insurance industry is corrupt and you need someone in your corner. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Visit them now so you know who to call later.
Now, our friend Ian Beckles, this might be a key to the game. Beckles brought this up. And I don't think he's wrong. The Bucks defense is visibly a better defense with Yaya on the field and not Joe Tryon Shoyinka. And Beckles doesn't think it was a major coincidence that Joe Tryon Shoyinka was starting for Shaq Barrett last week. And the Bucks were terrible. So his theory is, get Shaq Barrett on the field. He's better than Joe Tryon on Shoyinka. And that would be a big step up for the defense. What's your thoughts on that, Ira?
I'm not sure that one's going to matter. I'd sure like to see KJ Britt on the field, Lee. I think he's a very good run stopper. He's where he's supposed to be. Sometimes Devin White's not where he's supposed to be. This is not a game where you need the big pass rush against Bryce Young. Lee, I'm not worried about Bryce Young carving him up. I'm just not. This is a game where I think they're going to try to out-muscle the Bucks front, and New Orleans did a very good job of that last week. I think KJ Britt could be a big factor. I Lavonte David, you know, I think he's got 12 tackles in his future on Sunday. I just, you know, and I don't care where this game is, and I'm looking at the weather report right now. 53 degrees on Sunday, and it looks like it's sunny. It looks like weather's not going to be a factor. A lot of good signs in the Bucks' favor. Steve, the fact that the game's in Charlotte, I don't think it matters one bit. Not one bit. First of all, they don't get a home field advantage over there. Who's Tepper going to throw drinks on? His own fans on Sunday when they're behind? And, Steve, to be fair and honest, I think the Bucks have, you could argue, have played better on the road than they have at home this year. They've dropped the ball at home several times. You know, and you know, they've had some bad games on the road, but they've had some good performances on the road, like Green Bay. Like Green Bay.
Don't they have a losing division record at home? 1-2?
Let's see. Lost to Atlanta, lost to New Orleans. That's right, Lee. That's right. I'm not worried about the game being in Charlotte. Mayfield looks fine. No excuses, Stevie. No excuses.
You got a final score after that rant there, Sage?
24-10. Wrap this up and get back on the plane and prepare for the fading Eagles.
They really shouldn't lose the game. However, I will say I do think it being in Charlotte does matter. The Panthers' only two wins this season came at home, and they weren't against terrible teams. I mean, they beat Houston and they beat the Falcons. And I watched their game against Green Bay. I mean, Green Bay kicked a field goal with like 20 seconds left to win the game. It was Bryce Young's best game of the year. That was on Christmas Eve, I believe. Yeah, Christmas Eve. So, of course, they followed that up with getting shut out. They're a bad team, but I don't think it's 110% blowout from the opening whistle. I'm going to say the Bucks will put up the points, though, and they won't be stupid when it comes to you know, running up the middle over and over again. I'm going to say 28-16 Bucks.
What do you got, Lee?
I think people are going to sweat this out. Bobby Fenton retweeted something from a gambling guy, from a handicapper. Record of losing teams facing win and you're in games
right. The
last week of the season, 71 and 102 against the spread. That's pretty good. Losing teams against teams that are winning, you're in the final 2 weeks of the season. 72-0-102 against the spread. So that suggests it's probably going to be a close game. 24-21 Bucks. It's going to be a nail biter.
Oh boy. You know, Steve, nobody said that the Bucks are exceptional. Nobody said the Bucks are elite. But for crying out loud, Steve, after laying an egg last week and now playing what looks like, I mean, Steve, they got the number one pick now. They don't have the pick, but they earned their way to the number one pick on merit. Steve, you got a playoff berth. You know, when or you're done. And just to think that they could lose this game after last week and not being ready, I don't think Bowles would have a leg to stand on, Steve. I don't think he should even bother to report the $1 on Monday morning. If all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, absolutely. He should walk out the door and just say, thank you, I appreciate your time, and thank you. And that's it, and walk out the door. If they lose, honestly, I think if they lose like Lee said, a three-point game, that would be a massive, massive red flag. It should be for the Glazers. That would be unacceptable, frankly. You struggled with a team that is absolutely brutal. And
twice you struggled with them.
Yeah. Twice. Yeah. Yeah. In a game that you were giving 110%, what does that say? So, yeah, I think Bowles needs a few style points in this game. I think they need to go out and win by a solid, 14 points. Not like last time where, the Panthers only had like 20 seconds left, but they could have, won the game and on a, gotten close enough to for a Hail Mary there. That would not have been okay. I think he needs a few style points.
Steve, all we can hope for is next week's podcast will be a playoff edition podcast. That would be a beautiful thing. I'll say this, Lee, looking ahead and assuming a Buck victory, which, Lee, I know you're going to tell me, take it easy, Ira. Take it easy. Don't assume anything.
I'm assuming it.
But, Lee, I'll say this, Lee, whether it's the Eagles or the Cowboys, and it's going to be one or the other, coming into Ray J., Lee, is it crazy to suggest 35% of the crowd will be rooting for the visitors?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's 100% accurate, Ira. Kind of like last year's playoff game. We saw it last year against the Cowboys. Not as much. I don't know if the percentage was that high, but it was certainly, 20-plus percent.
Would there be more of a percentage of visiting fans if it's Dallas or Philly?
I don't know. Ira, what are you asking me to predict here? I don't know. I don't have a magic wand here, Sage. But, I did want to sort of relay something that was kind of funny. You were talking about Canales and his in-depth answers and stuff. And I heard he loves to chat, loves to give details, which is great. I had heard Robert Turbin, who played for him in Seattle, talking on Sirius XM NFL radio about how Canales, his job he's done is underrated. He was just talking about that in general terms as far as what it takes for a new coordinator and the pieces the Bucks have and whatnot. He talked about Canales' work ethic when he was in Seattle, and he's like, this guy used to roll in this old beat-up 1990s truck, rumble in, and he's always there and this and that or whatever. And I was too curious about the 1990s truck, so I reached out to Canales. I said, hey, I was thinking of writing this up, but I don't know if the guy was, exaggerating or what, or what's the deal with the truck? So of course he gets back to me, gives me all the details about the truck. It wasn't a 90s Ford that Turbin was talking about. It was a 1970s, a classic Chevy. And he was telling me about the truck and where it is now and the whole thing. So yeah, he loves
still has it.
He loves details and all that stuff. And he certainly does have the work ethic, Ira, but I think ultimately with Canales, I like the guy a lot. I don't think his answers necessarily shed a lot of light, because at the end of the day, if you ask Dave Canales, he's going to love every, he's a different version of John Gruden, because he loves every player. Everybody's doing great. Everybody's progressing. Everybody is getting better. The running game is good, even when it's the worst in the league. It drives me crazy. I don't know what you think.
That's not a bad point, Steve. But in that respect, Steve, he's like 90%. Of the coaches and the assistant coaches in the league in terms of shedding, some real in-depth analysis on what's going on inside the walls. But he's entertaining, Lee. He's entertaining. And for me, that goes a long way.
He can be very informative at times. I like to me, he's not Josh McCown. Josh McCown, you ask him a question, he'd take 10 minutes to answer and say nothing. Like, he'd answer a question like, what the hell did you just say? I mean, but whereas Canales has meat to his answers. Some of it is puffery, as Steve's talking about it. Some of it's puffery, but he's got a lot of meat to it. He does some explaining. I certainly think he's the, since Todd Monken, he's the best assistant coach the Bucks have had as far as dealing with the media. Now, 98% of the people listening to this podcast don't give a flying flip about that. And I get that. I understand that. Hey, look at Belichick. He's complete a-hole to us, but he wins. You know, that's what fans care about. That's what your listeners care about, Ira. You're a winner when you get Bucks in the Hall of Fame. They care about winning.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. Canales is interesting, and he, you know, says a lot of meaty stuff, but it's just, you know, personal taste. But you know what, Lee? Fans are encouraged and promoted to watch all those news conferences now. It's just the way it is, and you know, the way the teams operate now. So they're sort of part of that show too, in some ways. And you know, many thousands watch it on all the different social media or clips and stuff. So I think the fans care probably more than they should, but that's what we love. We love fans who care, live the dream every day, listening to the Sage. Ira, you got a final thought here for everybody?
I can't wait to for the three of us to join forces again next week for a special playoff edition podcast for your 2023 Buccaneers.
Lee, you got a final thought, or are you just going to bask in the glow of Ira's?
I'll say this while I'm thinking about it. I think the job Canales has done with Baker Mayfield is underrated. You guys, I can't remember if it was Ira or you, Steve, but you put something in my head. Canales is a first-year coordinator. And look at the job he did with a guy who some people in the NFL world who, you know, is respected said was the worst quarterback in the league last year. And now you could argue he's top 10. That's a hell of a job for a first-year coordinator.
Sure is.
Yeah, you know, I don't even think it's some people. I think the Saints thought, invested $40 million, that Derek Carr was better than Baker Mayfield. The Falcons thought Desmond Ritter was better than Baker Mayfield. So there's a lot of it's more than just Peter King, you know. It's a lot of people who invested a lot of money and screwed up. So yeah, he has done a hell of a job. All right, Sage, hopefully that hell of a job continues, and we'll talk to you next week.